Comments made on CeroTalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent CeroTech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest CeroTalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of CeroTech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff. And welcome to CeroTalk Tech Chat 89 for February 10, 2011. This is Michael Loff. Along with me, our co-host and producer man, Mr. Joe Steinkamp. Thanks for joining us tonight, Joe.
Happy to be here, Michael. Looking forward to talking to our guest tonight.
Yes, and our guest tonight, the infamous Jim Fruchterman. Never know how to introduce you. He's a big guy with Benetech and RTF raising the floor. I don't know. I'm just like, how do I describe this guy? He's got his hand in so many pies. He's promoting a increased number of books and open standards and mainstream access technology built into items. And so, Jim, we welcome you and thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Well, instead of making our users wait, I think we're going to start off with kind of some of the big announcements coming forth from Bookshare, and then we'll go into some other innovations and projects that you're working on, if that's okay. So I guess we could start off with the Read2Go and the Bookshare for Mac, two big announcements.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, our objectives are to make it easier for people to use Bookshare books wherever they want to use them, on whatever platform, you know, whether they want to use them in Braille or large print or in, you know, synthetic speech. And so, we do a bunch of things to make it easy for other assistive technology vendors to use the products, but we're also trying to make essentially free or very low cost products that people can use to get access to books. And we put out a request on the Bookshare website, you know, what kind of things would our users like to see? And I think the thing that had five times more votes, you know, hundreds and hundreds of votes, was get Bookshare, you know, working really well on the iPad/the iPhone/the iPod Touch. And so at ATIA, we announced Read2Go, which is a application designed to be used on the iPad, but it works on the other iOS platforms as well, that integrates the Bookshare sort of library into a talking application with a high-quality text-to-speech engine. So basically, you open Read2Go, you type in Harry Potter in book search, up pops all the Harry Potter books, you push a button, it downloads the book, opens it, and then, you know, you have a high-quality text-to-speech, you know, reading it aloud in a cappella voice. And so it's been announced. We're sort of in late beta. We're submitting it to Apple shortly for approval. We've had a lot of conversations with Apple before, you know, this point, so we're feeling pretty good that that we're not going to get caught up in their acceptance process, but that is always an issue. And our projection is it'll be available for $19.95 by the end of March.
Very good. I know always the first submission to Apple, I think, takes a little more time. Then once they know you're established, they seem to move through a little faster. That's been my observation. Yeah. So we look forward to that. And also you have an app for the Mac.
Yeah, and I think we've had an app for the Mac before, but then, you know, Apple goes through a few upgrades of operating systems on Macs, and suddenly you're kind of behind the time. So we've done a new version of the Read Out Loud product from Don Johnson that's specifically, you know, for Bookshare users, and it's been tested with the sort of latest Mac OS and works well. And that's, of course, a free download to any Bookshare user. You just log in and you go to, you know, reading tools, and you can just download it for free.
But it doesn't stop there, because you've actually launched the Bookshare Developer Network. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we've always had support for AT vendors to use our API, our application programming interface, so you can actually build in Bookshare into a reading app. And probably, you know, the best known example of this is Kurzweil building it into the K3000 and the K1000. So, and the idea here is it's the same thing as Read2Go, but it's for any other vendor's product. Is you just make it very easy for them to build in the searching and downloading into their own application. And so the idea of this developer network is we've just kind of gone to the next couple of generations of this and made it really easy. And last night I had dinner with TV Raman, and Raman already announced, you know, that he loves the API, and in under 2 hours he was able to make his product, Emacs Speak, support this, and he's already developed his own Emacs Speak, you know, keyboard interface so you can search for and download books. So we're hoping that anyone who has a product that, you know, uses Braille or puts out text-to-speech or, you know, does enlargement can go ahead if they choose and build in this Bookshare app. We think everything we can do to remove the hassle factor of getting a book makes things more accessible. And so this is just one way we try to make that happen.
And I guess even though it's been around for many years, we should point out that Emacs Speak is not a Mac product, but a Linux based screen reader, right? I mean, because it's...
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Unix sort of tool, and it caters very well to people who are programming in the sort of Linux Unix world. But Raman is playing these sort of dual roles, right? As both being one of the key drivers of Google's accessibility strategy, but you know, long before he joined Google, he was the main developer of Emacs Speak.
You can't forget your first love.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes you a very busy man there. Is there anything else on Bookshare? Let's see. You have some fascinating numbers. First of all, it looks like you have direct deals with publishers, which is like Rand Corporation and some other entities. So you're getting the content directly, and it's clear, free of any errors that you might get with a optically scanned document. So that's very exciting news.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that last year, for the first time, the number one source of new content for Bookshare was the publishing industry, voluntarily sending us the same books they're sending to Amazon for the Kindle and other sort of ebook platforms. They're sending us their books, and here's another key point. They're also giving us rights to distribute it to disabled people outside the United States. So the two benefits are, one, you don't have to go buy the book, chop it, scan it, proofread it, you know, format it, blah, blah, blah. We actually get these books in high-quality XML, which is a close cousin of the DAISY format, something that we should come back to. But basically, we write a little tool. You know, we get 3,000 books from Simon & Schuster, and we write a little tool, and we push a button, and suddenly, you know, 2,900 of them pop into the Bookshare collection. And it's, you know, I think that we added over 25,000 books from publishers last year. So we have a veritable flood of content. We, you know, we're adding thousands of books a month now, and that's really exciting. So, you know, any current published thing from the majority of the top 10 publishers in the United States is now coming in thanks to those publishers directly into Bookshare and making it just really easy. So, you know, one of our goals for Bookshare is that we wanted it where half the time someone came to look for a book at Bookshare, like a specific book, they'd find it. I think that number is like up over the 90%. Level. As long as you're not looking for a textbook, we still got plenty of work to do on textbooks. But in terms of a, you know, fiction, nonfiction genre, we're just getting a lot of that books in there. And of course, we also have some incredible numbers on users. I mean, what, 4 years ago we had 6,000 users for Bookshare. Now we're at 125,000, and again we're adding thousands of people every month. So we're expecting to be at 250,000 people in the next couple of years that we're serving, and that's just in the United States. And then we're going international. So maybe I'll pause there and see if you have any questions about the U.S., and then I'd like to talk a little bit about international.
Okay, yeah, one thing I'll ask you quickly about the U.S. before we go into the international front, and that is, what significance do we see from the 21st Century Communications Act in terms of the work that you're doing, or what are we going to need to advocate either to the FCC or other entities, manufacturers or products, or how significant is this bill, this legislation?
Well, you know, I think that it's really significant in the larger context of more and more information being put into forms other than text. I mean, you know, in the U.S., you know, 5 years ago, you would have said, you know, less than 5% of books are available in an accessible format. And now, you know, with the advent of the e-publishing industry, e-books, with publishers collaborating with us, with what other people are doing, with the fact that mainstream ebook publishers are starting to add accessibility features or support for accessibility, we're now actually sort of starting to nail text. Oops, but they moved, you know, they moved the cookie, you know. Now it's, we've got graphics and textbooks and a lot of the educational materials in there. Oh, we have all these videos. So part of the 21st Century Act was sort of saying, oh, wait a minute, you know, don't start shying away from actually getting, you know, descriptive video, getting things captioned. And so starting to lay some of that groundwork, I don't think it goes nearly far enough, but it sort of, you know, pushes back against some of the efforts I saw to kind of back away from accessibility of this sort of more richer media. And there are other things going on that I should talk about, you know, later on about how we can make more and more of these sort of image-based and multimedia things more accessible to people with vision impairments.
Exactly. There's a wealth of things here to cover. I do want to go back to your mention of textbooks, because certainly they are going to an electronic format. They would like to get rid of the hard copies and probably eliminate the resale of books in college and get full payment every semester, you know, as the students need that. So what successes or failures are we having on that front to ensure that those books are going to be available to the college students present and future?
Well, let me divide it into K-12 and college separately, because I think they're worth examining differently. What happened in K-12 was in 2004 when IDEA was reauthorized. They set up a national repository at APH, the American Printing House of the Blind, for all K-12 textbooks to be put in a high-quality XML format, again, a close cousin of the DAISY format, not only with all the text, but with all the graphics. And, you know, a number of years went by, and it really wasn't happening, and it's something that we pushed really hard on, and we had a fight against the publishing industry and all this. We and RFB&D essentially got kind of locked out of this repository, which was a huge surprise to the two major organizations that do this. And we managed to kind of fight to allow states to designate us and RFB&D and people like us to be able to go and download books out of this repository, because it's only 5 people per state get to use it. Well, now Bookshare is the largest user of the NIMAC, this repository, by a factor of probably 5. And we've done, I think, between 2,000 and 3,000 textbooks out of the 4,000 or 5,000 textbooks that are in the NIMAC. So some of the arcane things that happen is we can't get a book until we get a request for it. We can't proactively do it, something I wish we could change in the law next time around. But you know, I think we have a good demonstration of the power of ebooks, of these standardized XML formats that are becoming commercially standard. And what happens is when we get a student in, let's say a high school student says, you know, I need this history book, they can ask us for it, and it'll be in Bookshare in under a week and often in under 2 days, which is a kind of turnaround time people aren't used to, but it's because this infrastructure exists. Now, we have the pictures, but that doesn't mean we're going to get all the images described, which is this longer-term issue that we have to address. So in K-12, we're making pretty good progress, and you know, I'd say that it's starting to work. In post-secondary, we don't have anything like that system. Instead of, let's say, 5,000 or 10,000 textbooks being used in K-12, you have 200,000 or 300,000 books being used in a given year by college students with disabilities, so it's a much bigger problem. You don't have centralized purchasing. So this is a huge issue, and there was a advocacy from you know, the disability community, people like NFB, pushing on this topic a couple of years ago, and what they did is they decided to set up a commission to study it. Probably a good starting point. So that commission just got launched in the last couple of months. I'm on the commission. George Kirscher's on the commission. The head of RFB&D is on the commission. Tuck Tinsley, the head of APH, is on the commission, as well as a bunch of other people from different disability groups. And we're trying to study how to solve this problem in higher ed. And it's a public process. It has a 1-year timetable on it. And I really do encourage anyone who's listening, who's a student with a disability in higher ed, someone who's involved in higher ed, that they actually weigh in this process and, first of all, put in the ground, you know, put on the table, here are the problems that are here today, and here's the way the world should work. And that will make it much easier for us as the advocates on the commission to push for real progress on this issue, because I think it's way overdue.
I think the first suggestion is to be able to tell all professors that if they publish a book for their classes, they have to make it accessible. Because I remember in class, it seemed like every professor I had was trying to pub their book. So, you know, that made it very hard to go out and actually get accessible media when you had to actually get the book that was written by the guy last semester. So that's my suggestion and my contribution.
Yeah, and there are people chipping away at a lot of these different things. Like the Higher Ed Act that set up this commission also says that basically professors have to put their book list along with ISBNs on the table right at the beginning of the semester, rather than, you know, waiting until later. And you know, is it being enforced? Well, it's no, but maybe it'll starting to be. And so there's a whole bunch of things that we need to do. And I know there's a lot of push on people around affordability. If professors knew when they were choosing textbooks what the textbook would cost their students and whether or not it's accessible for their students with disabilities, things would be different. So, you know, there's sort of first things first kinds of things like one you suggested. And then there's, all right, now that we've done that, how do we actually get the accessible version out there? And of course, my dream in all these things is that everyone can buy accessible products the same day, the same price as the non-accessible products. And matter of fact, that the idea that there are accessible and non-accessible products goes away. All products are just accessible, but that's... we got a lot of work to do to realize that vision.
Yeah, because I wonder, does that go back to the authors, or is it really something we take up with the publishers? But you did mention George Kircher. So I wanted to talk about some news that we talked about last week, the fact that looks like the next 2.1, and it could ultimately be 3.0 revision of EPUB will actually integrate DAISY technology into it, where right now I think there's maybe two components of DAISY involved in that. So I'm curious what that means. That could mean that DAISY in and of itself goes away or integrates into the EPUB format, although I did see that DRM, digital rights management, is not something to be addressed right now, and I don't know how many people will latch on to something that doesn't have the DRM component, but talk about that, EPUB and DAISY merging.
Well, I think George has done an incredible job of reducing the gulf between the commercial ebook technology and the DAISY ebook technology. So even in recent revisions of EPUB and DAISY, they're not as far apart as you might imagine. And it's one of the reasons that we've had such good luck with our partnerships with publishers, is because George helped influence the last version of EPUB and make it much closer to DAISY. So when we get EPUB from publishers, technically it's quite easy for us to automatically turn that into DAISY. But this vision of having them be the exact same thing is something that George has been working on for years, and it looks like it's within reach. And of course, I don't think people appreciate George is in this dual king of the hill position in both the accessible books for people with disabilities field as well as the commercial electronic publishing industry. So George is simultaneously the Secretary General of the DAISY Consortium and, I don't know if his title is chair or president, of the IDPF, the people who do the EPUB standard. This is very handy for all of us. That George is wearing both these hats. And so technically, it's even more interesting. There's now going to be a differentiation between essentially authoring in interchange formats and distribution formats. And so what you're going to see is that DAISY and EPUB are going to come together in the authoring and sort of, sort of the authoring side. And that's not really the DRM issue, right? Because when you're in the authoring area, you're not locking things up. When you're interchanging it with other people in the field, like your partners, you don't lock it up. And so what we're going to have is this very rich format that's the same for both people with disabilities alike, around the authoring and sort of that side. But when you actually get out to what gets distributed to people, you're probably going to see HTML5 as the major distribution format. In other words, you will read these books in a web browser. And then we're going to still have our DRM issues where the great irony is that all these inaccessible DRM formats started life as a totally accessible XML book, right? And so the DRM battle is not completely won, or we get what I call sort of check the box accessibility that we've seen often from Adobe, or not seen, where, you know, they can say that they've made it accessible, but really, is it workable? Is it usable? No. Okay. So we need to actually keep fighting on those topics.
So you mentioned HTML5, and I know there was some concern with the dropping of a component called Long Desk, but you said it actually, maybe they found a new component that may actually work better. So you're feeling good about HTML5 becoming a tool for books and content of the future.
Yes. We are feeling good about that. There was a recommendation to drop Long Desk that was accepted, and I just want to explain what this is so people who aren't familiar with the terminology get it. But I think a lot of people know that when you have a graphic on a web page and you're following accessibility standards, you're supposed to put alt text in that says, the Benetech logo, or you know, if it has text in it, you actually, you know, put the text in. So someone who gets essentially a visual representation of text as a picture actually hears through the alt text. Long Desk was short for long description. And what it was is not only might you have alt text, but you might get a longer description that would go off to a separate web resource and actually have a longer description. And we're working on making, let's say, images and textbooks more accessible. And so we were really concerned because just as we were starting to get ready to sort of kick in providing longer descriptions of key educational graphics, we were about to lose this capability of adding that. Because an alt text is, there's a couple different implementations, but it's not supposed to be longer than 255 characters at the max, and often their implementations were 127 characters. You can't actually fully describe a complicated, you know, science graphic in 127 characters. You know, you can't tweet it. What's happened is that people have said, well, we still don't like Long Desk, but some of the accessibility people, especially people from the DAISY Consortium and NCAM at WGBH, the captioning folks, they actually came up with a recommendation for something called it's called Described By. But the idea is that you can attach to an object a link to a description. And so that looks like it's making progress. So I'm actually quite excited that, you know, we're looking at a setback there, and now we're going to probably end up with something better than what we had before, because Long Desk, you know, has been around for 10 years, but not all that well implemented or used. And I think the other thing that's really exciting is our vision of web browsers is that they should talk natively. In other words, that text-to-speech should be built in as part of the web browser so that people, you know, who maybe can't afford a screen reader or don't know how to use it, you know, can have the ability to have a standard web page just talk on its own. And so that's been a conversation going on among the HTML5 crowd. Because you see, what really drives the next generation of HTML are the people who make the browsers. The Internet Explorer people, Google Chrome, Mozilla Firefox, Opera, people like that. And so yesterday I got a demonstration from our engineering VP of a new a version of Chrome where he was able to start make an app, you know, a web page basically talk on its own using something that's now in the shipping version of Chrome, but it's as a sort of more experimental feature. So there's some exciting stuff happening. And of course, my dream is that people can go to Bookshare and log in and start reading any book, you know, on the web browser without having to download a thing. And I think that would be a big step forward. It would remove another 3 or 4 barriers to people using Bookshare books if they could simply, you know, say, oh yeah, start reading that, and go, oh, I think I'll download that. That's interesting. Nah, I don't like that. Move on. That would make people's lives much easier.
Yeah, I think as long as the download component is there, I think some people, and we talk about a little bit, you know, the Kindle for PC, where you are tethered to your computer at that point and you don't have the ability to manipulate it and take it with you on the go as you'd like, but we can come back and talk about that.
Yeah. Well, I want to fight for people to be able to put it on their Braille display. Right? I mean, ultimately, if you can't do that, you don't really have control. And that's shorthand for a whole bunch of other accessibility capabilities. If you can't do that, you can't do a whole bunch of other things. So that's usually my metric is, well, how do you get that onto your Braille display, your note taker, and walk around with it? That's where we got to aim.
And I think even provisions in the 21st Century Communications Act talk about making websites talk out of the box. Once you land on the website, that you have an option to either get it to talk, be it a hotkey or whatever. So I guess a lot of development there. And you say Google Chrome is in that space.
I gotta read that section. I didn't remember that part.
I saw mention of that, so that's interesting. I think we've covered all the U.S.-based specific stuff, where we can maybe go more international and talk about WIPO. And let's start with raising the floor. While other people are raising the bar, you are raising the floor. And by floor, you're talking about just what mainstream integrated access technology built into the mainstream products, just like you're talking about the web browser and things of that sort, right? Explain what you're doing with raising the floor.
Well, this is all part of the same overarching vision where what do we really want to do? We want to make sure that everybody on the planet who has a disability that keeps them from reading books or content for education, employment, social inclusion, we want to make sure that they've got it. Well, how do you actually make that happen in practice? Well, our existing assistive technology structure that we're used to here in the United States isn't going to get us there. And so And people have often pushed us to say, oh, you know, why don't you get more involved with open source, you know, screen reader development? I'm like, no. Let's make the browser. Let's make the mobile device. Let's make it talk and work for everybody. Because if you go around the world and you talk about, let's say blind people around the world, you know, 97% of them have got dirt when it comes to accessible technology. They don't have something that works. They don't have access to the content. And so when it comes to getting education or employment or being a part of society, you know, they're at this big disadvantage. So our vision of how you do that, and raising the floor was a term coined by Professor Greg Vanderheiden of the University of Wisconsin's Trace Center. So pretty much the foremost academic in accessibility. And so Greg had this vision that we need to build accessibility into the internet, into the web, and, you know, not try to do everything that JAWS does or some other high-performance device could do. But let's make sure that people have their basic, you know, civil right, human right to get access to content built into that $30 cell phone that you know, their family's picking up for everyone else to use. So if you think about how you get there, well, building text-to-speech into the browser so that it's free is part of that. Open content is part of that, where you're not constrained by copyright, that people actually choose to make their content available under an open content license. So maybe educational materials available free to everybody. The textbooks cost zero. And there's exciting things going on in higher ed around free textbooks. So let's make sure to come back to that one, because it's very cool. But, you know, so there's a lot of different components to that. And so Raising the Floor has actually been incorporated as an international nonprofit. It's got a lot of support from people in Europe, from people in the U.S., from big corporations like IBM and all that. And it's, how do we actually ensure that as we roll out more, you know, the future generations of web browsers and the internet and mobile devices, that more and more of them come with accessibility built in for free or for a locally affordable price, which in the developing world might be, you know, the equivalent of a buck. But how do we get people that so that they can actually go forth and do it? And of course, we consider ourselves one of the anchor tenants of Raising the Floor. And of course, we're doing it around books, and we're hoping that, you know, other people do it around all the other sort of things that people need.
Let's talk about the treaty at WIPO here. This is something you brought up, and there was initially some opposition, and some folks had to come to agreement. So explain what this is and what it means to us.
Oh, the battle is still going on, but we're making progress. So one of the things that made Bookshare possible in the United States is the Section 121 CAFE exception that basically says a nonprofit like Benetech or RFB&D or the Library of Congress can grab just about any book, make an accessible version of it, and distribute it to people with bona fide disabilities that affect their ability to read the book, and basically solve this social problem. So it's actually built right into our copyright law. So that means, though, even if there's a publisher who says, no, I don't want to give you permission, we say, well, tough toe. We're going to scan it, you know, and we do it. And that makes this accessibly possible. And that makes this sort of, you know, hitting the kind of numbers we're talking about possible. Well, go outside the U.S., these copyright exceptions are not standard. So, and also import and export, in other words, providing a, let's say, a blind person in Jamaica a book that we produce here, we can't do that legally because the law doesn't permit it around import and export. So the World Blind Union got a group of people together about between 3 and 4 years ago, and it's, you know, some of the standard cast of characters, people like George Kircher, like me, people from the World Blind Union, got together and helped draft a treaty with the help of people from the American Library Association and bunches of other sort of advocacy groups and the like. And that treaty actually got introduced at the World Intellectual Property Organization in Geneva. So WIPO is like the World Trade Organization for intellectual property sort of things. And it's where international treaties get established. And so Brazil, Ecuador, I think Chile, and now Mexico have all sponsored this treaty proposal. And if I were to sum it up, I'd say make something like the U.S. copyright exception a global norm in all countries, and import-export, you know, that allows people to exchange these things across borders, actually legal. And I would say that, but let's just put it this way, the European Union and the publishing industry haven't fully embraced this. So there are active negotiations going on. One of the key breakthroughs is that Stevie Wonder got invited to WIPO for their last session and basically said, you know, you guys better fix this or I'm going to write a song about how nasty you are. I'm maybe paraphrasing mean, roughly. So we're, I think in June, we have our first negotiating session about this. There are counter proposals from the European Union and from the U.S., as well as the African group. But I will just leave you with one key point. The United States, the Obama administration, actually came out and said, we believe in accessibility. We believe in solving this problem. We think it's important to solve this problem and to have balance between essentially the civil rights, the human rights of people with disabilities, and the interests of the publishers. It's the first time in 20 years a U.S. administration has come out with a pro-consumer statement, an international intellectual property regulation, and it was about accessibility for people with vision impairments and other print disabilities. So a big breakthrough, but plenty of work to be done.
And how do you address the publisher's concerns of piracy, if it's international and maybe it falls into hands of people who abuse the privilege?
Well, you know, I think we do social things and we do practical things, right? I mean, our practical position is actually if you trust people, they tend to behave. And if you tend to not trust people, they tend to return the favor. I mean, and the recording industry learned this, right? I mean, we had Napster, which was illegal, but it was filling a need that people had. And now we have iTunes selling unprotected, non-DRM'd music. And the publishing industry is still alive and actually is making more money than they did 10 years ago. But some of the people who used to make money 10 years ago aren't making money because where the money is being made got, you know, has shifted. The publishing industry is going through the same sort of thing. So one of the things that we do is we say, you know, they say you can't trust people. I said, hey, guess what? We have 125,000 users and we use a social DRM. Basically, you download a book from Bookshare, you decrypt it, and you can stick it on your Braille display and you could put it on the internet for free. But you agree not to do that. And we tell you, hey, if you do that, that will screw other people with disabilities. Do you really want to do that? No, let's respect the social deal of helping people with disabilities without screwing the publishers, you know, financial interests. And what happens? You know, every month we find one or two of our users who've posted a book for free on the internet, often because of incompetence as opposed to malice. And we say, hey, I'm sorry you've lost your Bookshare privileges because you violated the law. You know, and we tell the publishers about it. Do the publishers go and sue those people? No way. You know, there is no perfect DRM. There is no way that you can build a lock strong enough, not that people can't break off. But, you know, if you just sold people accessible product, you know, if you made it easy for them, they'd actually make more money. And actually, that's my number one message to the publishing industry is sell accessible books. Make the standard book accessible. And I believe that with the recording industry as an example, they'll get there in 6 to 10 years, but we're going to have a slow motion repeat of the agony that the recording industry went through. And, you know, we're going to have people suing publishers and schools, like NFB has sued schools over accessibility, until this day finally happens.
Jim, what is the diagramcenter.org? What do they do?
Diagram is a new R&D project that we were awarded $1 million a year for the next 5 years from the Office of Special Education Projects at the U.S. Department of Education. The award was made to essentially Benetech Bookshare, the DAISY Consortium, George Kirsch, and the National Center on Accessible Media at WGBH of Boston, which is Larry Goldberg and the incredible team there that are in descriptive video and captioning. And so our goal is to dramatically improve the accessibility of graphics. And this is one of the reasons we were so concerned about stuff going on in HTML5. So we're developing open source tools and open standards to make it really easy to add image descriptions to images. So our dream is that a publisher could add in image descriptions during their workflow with free tools that we'd provide that would match up with standards for images so that, you know, your standard image would have a place to put these kind of descriptions. And then we want to make it easy for volunteers to do what's called crowdsourcing. You know, our dream is that someone with an Android phone or an iPhone, you know, who's sighted and wants to help accessibility can spend, you know, 4 minutes while they're sitting waiting for a bus typing in a description of a graphic, and then, you know, adding up thousands of or tens of thousands of those people, we'll be able to really tackle the image description problem. So we'd like to have free tools and drive the cost of describing a graphic down by an integer factor, 3 or 5 or more, to make it much more practical to get image accessibility, because we think that's essential for access to educational materials with the direction that educational content's going these days.
Now, how would someone, where would they go to start? Say they had a new idea. I'm thinking I've got contacted by an entity called tactile-world.com, and they're looking for funding to do a project to actually give, you know, haptic or forced feedback which would be great when I think of diagrams and images on the screen to actually feel the shape and texture and so forth. And so how would an entity that wants to work with this project get involved? Maybe they need funding or just resources.
Well, they would go to the diagramcenter.org, which is the website. And right now we're in the process of researching all the image description technologies, tactile graphics technologies. WGBH is actually the key, NCAM is the key leader on that. But right now we're doing that. And then in the next couple of years, we're actually going to have basically we're going to let contracts to people who do assistive technology to add support for these new tools so that things will go better. I don't think we would fund an entire project like the one you just described, but they might be able to get some funding to, better integrate with, I think, these new standards and open source technology. And our goal again is, if you make open source technology that solves most of the problem, makes it much easier to add in, much like our API makes it really simple to add in support for, say, Bookshare into a talking app.
I think we're going to open up for questions here. And I know there's a number of things you mentioned you'd like to go back to. I forgot to ask you in advance about this one, but I wonder if this could be used to protect content. There's a lot of interest and concern over a technology called near-field communications, and the concept mm-hmm. where you could use your phone, Android or iOS and others, to actually make purchases and things of that sort. Are you familiar with this technology? Do you think it's a good thing, bad thing? What do you know about it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be built into most Android devices in the next year or two, right? I mean, this is that special chip that does the near-field stuff.
Right. I mean, I hadn't thought about it until I just asked this question. That could be a mechanism for authorizing protected content, like books. And so even if someone had the physical document, maybe they couldn't do anything with it. Going back to something you had mentioned before, this concept of an international or some kind of national or database where a person could be authorized as being blind or special needs and be able to get access to unlock content as opposed to having to register with RFB&D and Bookshare and NLS and all of these other entities. What's being done on that front?
Okay. That's a problem that we're actively kicking around right now, and there's a bunch of different takes on it. So let's kind of go back. The overarching goal is for people to be able to buy accessible products without having to prove that they have a qualifying disability, right? If you're buying the product, don't get in my face about whether I have a certain kind of disability. Why do you care? I bought your product. So that's our overall goal, and that's a goal that we share with NFB and the Reading Rights Coalition and other people. But that's not the way things are going today. So one thing that we're kicking around is, where do people prove that they have a qualifying disability? Well, they do that in school to get special education services. They do it with NLS, with RFB&D, with Bookshare. They do it with the equivalent organizations outside the U.S. One of the things that already exists technically is a way to sort of authenticate yourself to a website without having to type in all your information, okay? And technically, this is called OAuth, like the letter O followed by the beginning of the word authorization. And this is commonly used by, for example, Amazon, right? Or Google Checkout or some of these other things where, you want to buy something, people say, oh, we know from Amazon that you're good for the money. Yeah, sure, you can buy without giving us your credit card or anything like that. So what if you went to a place right now where someone says, well, we're not going to give you access to the book, but if you can prove that you have a qualifying disability, we'll let you do it. Well, what if we simply said, well, we'll support OAuth, and so you simply say, well, I'm not going to give you my disability data and all that kind of stuff because I don't want to go through that hoop, but hey, look, I'm logged in over here at RFB&D or Bookshare or NLS, Bard or something like that. Give me access. That could be done. Is it the right solution? Long term, I'd like to have something that's much more generous than that. But short term, maybe it's something we end up with. So that is something that I'm thinking about. And it comes back to your sort of near field idea. It's another, the near field thing has a lot of different applications to accessibility. And, one is that sort of same kind of thing OAuth does. This person's good for it. Let them buy this thing. Whether it protects the content, I'm less convinced that that's a key thing. But now imagine that you're walking up to a kiosk that you don't know is there, and suddenly, because of this near field stuff, you realize there's a kiosk there, and suddenly you can start interacting it with it through your accessible mobile device, and you don't actually have to use the inaccessible touch tablet that actually is on the kiosk. Whoa, that could be exciting. And so I think we're seeing a real shift where it's an example of mass market technology that have really exciting commercial applications that we can hijack for great accessibility applications. And the more we do that, the more we're going to accomplish on accessibility.
It's funny, as you've been talking about that, I've been sitting here thinking that wouldn't it be great if a near-field communications type thing could happen at libraries or, say, designated centers? You could identify yourself and a Braille display that would be there for the public to use would be active as you come up with, say, OAuth or some scheme like that. And, you know, that would be really great in public situations where, well, you know, you could identify.
And, or even and an airport like kiosk. That. I mean, there's all kinds of just where you need to read. That's exciting.
As a matter of fact, this is what Greg Vanderheiden talks about a lot when he talks about raising the floor. He says, look, the world where we all sit at our PCs and interact with the world through our PC is already over for most people on the planet, right? I mean, a lot of us haven't quite realized that, but that's over. People are, you know, walking up to kiosks, they have a work computer, they're at a workstation at school, and you know, Greg's vision is that you just walk up, it knows that you're, you know, and maybe it doesn't know that you're blind, because I think we don't want people to have to sort of disclose labels, but it might be, hey, this is a person who right now wants this to speak aloud, you know? Do I care if they want it to speak aloud because they're driving to work and they want to listen to the ebook instead of, you know, seeing it, or because they're blind? We don't care. This is your preference. Give it to me this way because that's the way I want it right this second. And we want that to work on any device, anywhere. And this is already starting to happen. I mean, you know, TV Ramen last night was describing how, you know, if he had accidentally left his Android phone, you know, behind and his wife has her Android phone, he can log in as him and suddenly all the accessibility features start working. And all he has to do is get his, you know, name and password in, and they're trying to figure out how to do that with, you know, accessibly, because that's like the one last things that's not accessible. But imagine that. You just do one little thing and bang, you're there. All right, what if you had OAuth that said, oh, yeah, which profile do you want? Do you want the talking profile, the enlarged print profile, or the Braille profile if you happen to have a Braille display with you?
We had a question going back to Bookshare asking about getting bad files from the publishers. How common of a problem is this, and what is done to rectify that?
You know, we don't get a lot of terrible files from publishers. It's really not a big problem. What is a big problem is we get bad metadata from publishers. And metadata is like information about the ISBN number and the author and the title. So if those things are screwed up, we can't automatically put it in Bookshare because you may not be able to find it. So we have much more metadata problems getting those things standardized than we do actual content problems. Now, you know, sometimes books get put into the NIMAC that are crappy because the publisher sent the textbook off to, you know, some other country to have the data entry done, and it came back and it was done poorly. But I think that represents under 1% of the content that we've seen in NIMAC sourced content. And when we do find that, we report it back to the NIMAC and they go back to the publisher and they make the publisher fix it. So I think the publisher stuff has just made for beautiful content. And not only, you know, I mean, most Bookshare books originally were scanned books, and there were even a fair number of books that were missing page breaks and that sort of stuff. Well, we're now to the point where if anyone finds a book in Bookshare that's, you know, missing a page or missing page breaks entirely or any of that kind of stuff, we're just committed to fixing it. There's actually a link on every single book page that says, hey, report a book problem on this. But the fact that we're getting so much great publisher content has really made the quality of Bookshare books go leaps and bounds above where it was, say, during our more original grassrootsy thing. And it's a pretty exciting trend.
Mike Arrigo asks a question about once iOS app is released, are you looking at doing something for Android to make Bookshare available on that platform?
Oh, absolutely we are. Matter of fact, we're already... The challenge is Android's a little bit behind Apple in accessibility, and we love the open sourceness of the Android platform. We see that as a plus over Apple. I mean, it's Apple makes it hard to do open source stuff, and it's hard for us to do free stuff on the Apple platform for reasons I think other people can also talk about. But we're really excited about doing an open source free Android app. What we've been trying to do is adapt an existing ebook reader on the Android platform, and it's not going as well as we might, but it's something that we've been working on, and I'm hoping, I don't know, you don't want to promise stuff that you can't, you know, actually, you know, be sure you can deliver, but we're actively working on it. I would really like to see us have something that works on the Android platform that's analogous to what we are talking about on Apple out in the coming year.
Okay, I'm volunteering for that one. that's excellent. And I think, again, it gets back to what we had talked about in the pre-show, having that data everywhere, anywhere, and as much places you can needed, like you were saying earlier. It's having that ability to be on the move and be able to get at that data. It's a revolution, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah, and I think, you know, having an API means anyone who wants to make a talking ebook app on the Android can support Bookshare. You know, we're making it really easy to do that. What we will do, though, is throw some weight behind at least one of these so that we can actually say, hey, here's one we've tested. Here's one that, you know, our tech support people will support. And, you know, I think that that's important for us to do. And even though we had so much more demand for the Apple iPad product than we did the Android product, the numbers out there is that, you know, there's more Androids selling in the real world. And so, you know, we're expecting that demand. People are going to wake up one day and say, well, why aren't I demanding this for my Android phone or my Android tablet? Which, of course, Android tablets are about to, you know, sweep the field and, you know, give Apple some real run for its money.
Kenny asks, if once you get the iOS app here for Bookshare, are you going to be able to back up your books with iTunes? Or is that, I would ask, is that pretty much mandated that you have to use iTunes to accomplish that? You have
to import them back into it?
Right.
Yeah, we're trying to avoid using iTunes. And so right now we don't have any support for iTunes per se. You know, and that's just, you know, well, then we get in the whole issue of, you know, right now, Apple's trying to get all ebook people to go through iTunes so that they can get their 30% cut. And, you know, once you sign up for Bookshare, you're getting all these books for free. We're hopeful that we're not going to run into any problems with that. But I would like to sort of not be in that exact same boat and have to start, you know, having questions about whether we're paying Apple enough money.
Jeff Bishop asks about what about the possibility of partnering with Safari to make more technical books available through Bookshare?
Well, we already have partnered with two of the Safari partners to make their books available through Bookshare. And, of course, one is O'Reilly. So, you know, there's a ton of O'Reilly content. And also Microsoft Press has made all their Safari content available to us. And so those are open and available to all Bookshare users. And what's really cool is O'Reilly's gone a step further. They asked us for our DAISY books back, and now O'Reilly sells DAISY versions of their books with their standard commercial products. And so you can buy O'Reilly and get accessible DAISY books. So there are multiple options of getting those things. But I'll be honest that one of the other Safari partners, which is Pearson, Pearson's sort of the biggest publisher that has been pushing back constantly against accessibility, pushing back against the NIMAC. And so, at least at the moment, we don't see them jumping on board because they're the one big publisher that consistently has refused to cooperate with us.
I'm feeling an advocacy campaign in here in order coming down the pike.
Well, you know, they're also the number one textbook vendor. And the fact that they don't play nicely with us doesn't necessarily mean that they're not playing nicely in general. I mean, I think that they're being quite compliant with their requirements to put books in the NIMAC. And so, you know, and I am hopeful that, you know, somewhere along the road that they'll come in accommodation with Pearson. And I think the idea that Pearson sells accessible products should be the thing that overcomes their objections. If they're making money, why should they argue about accessibility? So, and I think that they're sympathetic to that view. So even if they really just don't like the fact that Bookshare can scan any of their books and make it available for free to students without paying them anything. And, you know, it's a very commercial reason to be objecting to it. So, but, you know, we'll see what comes out of this higher ed commission. You know, that's where the advocacy campaign is going to go on. And I think what the Reading Rights Coalition has been doing, pushing publishers, has been really, really good to keep opening this up and keeping accessibility on the radar of the publishing industry and the ebook industry and the ebook distributors and the people who make the technology for that field.
What about things other than books, like LCD screens, LED, you know, is anything being done to make those entities readable?
You know, we see ourselves as helping fight for that, and that's, we think the Diagram Center is part of that larger issue. But right now, Bookshare is focused on books and book-like things, magazines and newspapers, and not, let's say scholarly articles, which is something that we have demand from students with disabilities for, especially in higher ed and grad students. We're not doing anything on that, though. That might be something we'd go so far as. But then when you talk about general accessibility, you know, we want to help enable raising the floor for for everything. But right now, you know, we're around books and making books accessible. And I think being clear on what we are doing and aren't doing helps us focus on doing more of the key things that we're tackling.
Kenny again asks, if you're avoiding iTunes, how is your app distributed? Or your content backed up?
It'll be on the App Store. It'll absolutely be on the App Store. That, you know, and Apple will get a cut of the $20, and I'm fine with that. You know, I was just saying that you're not going to sort of backport books into iTunes or to iBooks.
Do you have an opinion about what's going on with the Sony e-reader and where all that is coming from? I mean, just out of curiosity, since that is news that happened in the last week or so with what was going on, possibly even the Kindle app pulling from App Store.
Well, you know, it's this big commercial battle, right? And that was the thing I was kind of alluding to with iTunes is that Apple is pushing people to offer their e-books through essentially something where Apple gets 30% of the cut. And Amazon, to pick an example, is not set up to do that. Now, right now, I can go to Amazon, buy my book on Amazon, and then go to my iPad and load up the Kindle app on my iPad and read it there, and I didn't have to pay Apple anything. But Apple is pushing people to sell books through the App Store, through iTunes, through, you know, the different kinds of things. And people are very worried that Apple is going to keep marching in this direction and eventually lock out the ability to use books sourced through a channel that Apple didn't collect their toll on. And that's a lot of the current angst. And of course, all this kind of stuff doesn't help our cause, but, you know, certainly accessibility is not why these things are happening.
Jeff Bishop asks about the release date, and you said earlier March was about as close as you could pin it down.
Yeah, we're hoping to get to the end of the quarter, but again, it's, you know, we've got a, I mean, I've been getting new updates of Read2Go every other day, so I'd say that it's not quite done, though each version is much more stable than the prior one and better. So I hope we're getting close, and then, of course, we have to submit it to Apple. So, but certainly we announced it because we felt we were in the sort of final stages. We'd already been in beta test, and it's been working pretty well, but, you know, now we're trying all the different books in the Bookshare library and a lot of users using it different ways, and, you know, we're finding a few more quirks, so we got a few more bugs to stomp.
So do you have actual, if iTunes is out of the mix, do you actually have a library to go retrieve your, you know, if you restore your iPhone or something, or, you know, when you lose all the content on it?
Read2Go has a bookshelf, basically, of the books that you've downloaded, and it's, and in that way, it looks just like the Kindle app does on the iPad or the iBooks app looks. You know, you basically, in this particular app, you have the books that you have as part of that app.
We're down to our final 3 minutes, so I want to let you go where you will. There's a lot of things you mentioned that I'm not sure that we got back to. So,
I think one thing I wanted to mention is that we're really trying to expand Bookshare beyond the United States. Because of copyright regulations, this has been the only thing in our history that has been mainly U.S. focused, just because the copyright exception is so wonderful here and so difficult everywhere else, or most other places. So because of the publishers, the majority of the publishers being so cooperative, we now have, I think, 25,000 of our 95,000 books are available in Canada, and roughly that number in a lot of other countries. And those are almost all English, though we have over 1,000 Spanish books. We've started working in India. We have several thousand users in India, and we've already put in books in the Tamil and Hindi languages as well as English, and we have a bunch of Indian publishers on board. And just in the last couple of weeks, we announced that we're doing Arabic. So we'll actually be adding Arabic content to Bookshare, and already we have some countries in the Arabic-speaking region that are making Bookshare available for free to all of their citizens. And so we're really excited about that. Our interest in expanding Bookshare outside the U.S. is really around the developing world. We're working with the Canadians and the Europeans, but really our sweet spot is, what can we be doing in Africa? What can we be doing in Latin America? What can we be doing in Asia? Because people with disabilities in those countries really have so much less than what people in the United States benefit from. And we want to see that they actually get that sort of equal access so they can begin to have an equal crack at education and employment.
Well, we have an anonymous question here as far as who sent it, but saying that the blog has accessibility issues, graphical emails have been sent to blind users, and the scan quality have been replaced by some lower quality documents. And it says, what are you doing listening to members and volunteers?
I don't believe that when we replace publisher quality books from scan quality books, that we end up with a lower quality product. Often we get more structure. We do want to capture some volunteers have been doing image descriptions already, and sometimes we lose those. So that's on our sort of roadmap to get rid of. But I think that's a tiny fraction. I think the accessibility issues on the blog are overblown. I mean, you know, we have alt text on our graphics. I think the alt text isn't as good as it could be. I think I got in trouble because we had a Christmas card go out to our members with graphics. And then when I put it in my blog, I did a better description. And then I go, oh, you didn't share that. I said, well, I added a better description, you know. So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we can shoot at the people who are working really hard on this, or we can actually go after the people who aren't doing anything or actively obstructing it. And I think our energies are better spent doing that, because when we get a, you know, someone says, the scan's not good, we fix it within a month.
And as you mentioned,
there
the metadata.
A lot of organizations that do that. I mean, geez.
Yeah, and you mentioned the metadata. You said 3,000 books and 2,900 import, and someone's got to look through those other 100 and get the metadata issues resolved and make sure that everything ports. So, yeah.
Did you want to touch on the Jim Marks article? We talked about it earlier with higher education, and you had mentioned this on your Twitter feed. Is it something you wanted to touch on quickly?
No, I think it ties back to this. To this issue that we've touched on multiple times. Jim Marks is a rock star in higher ed accessibility. He's now moved out of that field into a higher level disability rehab job. But Jim was the head of AHEAD, which is the people who run DSS offices. And he wrote a fabulous article for the NFB talking about accessibility to ebooks as being the civil rights issue of our time as for blind people. And I just couldn't agree with him more. I respect him a great deal. And of course, you know, I'm working very hard, as are a lot of other activists, to do what we can to bring equal access in ebooks to fruition. And, you know, I'm really delighted that NFB has made it one of their top three advocacy objectives and thrown their weight behind it. And I think that's really made progress, because techies like me can bring up these technical issues and say how easy they are to fix. But until we have the real advocacy organizations throwing their political weight behind it, we don't often get the change that is technically so possible and so frustrating when we see it not happening. So anyway, I would highly recommend Jim's articles in my Twitter feed, as you said, and also I'm suggesting that all the commission members read this article, because I think it's so central to this issue of higher ed accessibility.
Very good. One final round comments from you, sir, as we put the wraps on a very interesting and informative tech chat for this evening.
Well, I just want to thank you guys for the opportunity to talk about these issues. I hope people get an idea that there are a lot of exciting technical issues going on, and that the opportunities are fabulous. But that, you know, as I just kind of mentioned, the advocacy need is still there. We have to keep these issues front and center, because the moment the advocacy pressure comes off, we get a oops. You know, we completely forgot about accessibility in the completely new version of, you know, the Adobe ebook products. Oops, you know, we've all run into that. So if we keep these things on, we'll just keep people thinking that leaving out the community that we care about is just a violation of their human rights, and we're just not going to stand for it. So
how do we do
people
that?
Will join me.
How do we do that? Well, do we go to, I know you have some different email lists off of the raisingthefloor.net, or where do we go to get to find out, so we can pick our battles
and choose what we want to advocate for. Everybody has a different thing that they can do. But one thing is, you know, speak out, right? And I think, you know, advocacy is so powerful from people who experience the problem and recommend a solution. And so when it comes to this higher ed commission, we need students with disabilities to stand up and say, you know, my DSS office, my school doesn't have a DSS office. I mean, we need to hear that kind of stuff, because the policymakers are often very removed from the real world. And the amazing thing is that the distance between us and the policymakers is far less than I think people really imagine. So it's going to be possible to submit electronic comments on this. It's possible to, you know, back advocacy organizations and support them, whether it's, you know, NFB's efforts or the World Blind Union's efforts or the Electronic Frontier Foundation's efforts or Benetech's efforts. These are ways we can actually make these things happen. And you know, a lot of this stuff is happening locally. I mean, I wrote a blog post recently about the newchange.org. You know, it's a platform to make it easier to run a campaign around a single instance of a social justice violation. And the kinds of things that people with disabilities run into fall into that. Well, the technology is making it easier to bring attention to bear on that. And so, for example, I blogged about a parent whose kid with a severe learning disability, they're being sued by the school district to try to take away accessibility to textbooks, even though this kid has a Kurzweil product that makes his life 10 times easier. They want to say, no, you don't need that stuff. Well, how do we actually bring attention to that? Well, I think the technology, the internet, the attention, we have a lot more power, both through organized organizations like NFP and as individuals, to keep these issues front and center and not let people get away with the, oh, we've already solved that problem. Oh, voluntary compliance from fill in the blank will actually solve that problem. Well, it often doesn't.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because with the crisis that's going on in funding in so many areas, it's really important that we all stand up and demand to be noticed, because I'm afraid that that's exactly what's going to happen, is they'll find the very minimums, meet those, and walk away. And I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, anyway, thanks again, guys. This has been great, and I really appreciate the opportunity to spend an hour talking to you, and I hope people get involved in Diagram and Bookshare API and use Bookshare and spread the word and let's make this happen for everyone on the planet who needs it, rather than just some of the people here who are more privileged than they know, when you actually go out there and look at the way things are in the rest of the world.
Exactly. Jim Fruchterman, thank you very much. With Benetech.org and RaisingTheFloor.net and many other entities, we will continue the discussion in the SAMNet Tech Room. For those who'd like to do voice chat and talk about it earlier, don't have access, go get a free 7-day demo at www.sa2go.com and join us next week. We're going to take a different slant on books, and we're going to meet up with some people. There's two very active email lists, people who write some very detailed reviews of books, and we're going to take the different spin and find out what a lot of folks out there are reading, be it NLS, RFB&D, Bookshare, and Audible, and other entities. So thank you, Jim. And as always, join us every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 6 Pacific, or 0100 UTC, I think it is. Let's stay connected and stay directed.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.